Hello, everyone. This is Steve Baker, sometimes known as the Pragmatic Constitutionalist. I am going to be reading today part three from my series about the Capitol Police. Part one and part two are available on my Locals page currently. The reason why I am reading this is because of the TLDR crowd among us. Too long, didn't read. And it is a long article this time. It's over 3,500 words. So I have decided to make this podcast recording so that those who don't have time for a 3,500 word article can listen to this while they're driving or working out or working in the garden, whatever the case may be. But before I get started, let me get my one commercial announcement out of the way. I have nothing to sell. I do not get paid for these articles from any group or any other source. This work is done on my own time, out of my own pocket. And as such, I am not able to do this without your support. You can, of course, subscribe to our Locals community free of charge as a read-only subscription, and I invite you to do that, test the waters. But if you can see way to support us there for as little as $5 per month, you will not only get a full membership privilege to everything in the community, but you will also get additional exclusive content that we don't release anywhere else on the internet, be that in our Facebook page, MeWe, Parler, Gab, Truth Social, or to our regular subscribers on Locals. So I would like for you to at least look at that. Please consider that, or you can do a one-time subscription option at $50 per year, which is 2 months free. And then, of course, for those who don't like making additional subscriptions, you've reached subscription burnout, so you don't want to do that. If you can support us with a one-time gift of any size, you can do that at our Locals community as well. The address for that is thepragmaticconstitutionalist.locals.com, thepragmaticconstitutionalist.locals.com, or to type it in shorter and easier, just type in tpc4usa.com, tpc, the number 4usa.com, or you can download the Locals app from your app store. And once you've done that, just type in at tpc4usa, and it'll take you straight to our page, and you can do with that what you will. All right, let's get started on this. The title of part three is a continuation, as I said, of parts one and two. It's called Capitol Police Were Sacrificial Pawns on January 6, part three. Heroes and villains are often the opposite of whom government and media lead us to believe. As I've detailed in part one and part two of this series, the United States Capitol Police frontline officers were purposefully blindsided by the events of January 6, 2021. Their leadership withheld vital intel as well as information about the legally permitted events to take place that day on the Capitol lawn. Emerging from that day's riotous melee were both heroes and villains. As we have become painfully aware over the last 3 years, what is force-fed us by our government officials and their sycophant media sources is far too often the exact opposite of the truth. This story is yet another such example. Quick editorial note, after I initially published this article, I was contacted by former United States Capitol Police Lieutenant Tarek Johnson to make one important clarification to the story, something which occurred before his rescue of the 16 officers from the Capitol Building Rotunda area with the help of two Oath Keepers. He explained that this was his second attempt to extract those trapped officers. His first attempt was initiated with the assistance of Capitol Police Civil Disturbance Unit officers, but the officers they were attempting to evacuate may not have been able to hear his directions because of the crowd noise in the rotunda area. It was also during that first rescue attempt that a protester put the red MAGA hat on his head, which then drew international attention to his story. So here we go. At 2:58 p.m. on January 6, 2021, United States Capitol Police Officer Lieutenant Tarek Johnson, having just completed the evacuation of the House Representatives Chamber, radioed the command center. "All right, sir, I think the House side is totally clear." A couple of minutes later, another USCP officer identifying himself as Unit Motor 13 radioed a distress call. "We have about a half a dozen officers that are trapped between hundreds of people in the rotunda doors that cannot get out. The crowd is very hostile, and we need additional officers here, hardened platoons with munitions, to be able to clear these steps. It's an officer safety issue." Having received no response for assistance, Motor 13 issued another distress call. On the center rotunda steps, we have approximately maybe 13 officers up here. None of us are in hard gear. We have about a half dozen officers that are trapped between the rotunda door and the crowd. Hearing these messages, Lieutenant Johnson asked for the operator to patch him direct to Motor 13. Receiving confirmation for his request, Lieutenant Johnson radioed an instruction to that officer. Just walk through the crowd and be friendly, and walk out yourself. They'll probably let you out. And advise the situation as you're walking through and be nice, but they'll probably let you out. Just be nice and walk down the steps. This might seem an unusual directive, but Lieutenant Johnson had been moving back and forth through the crowd of protesters inside the Capitol, having successfully initiated the evacuation of both the Senate and House chambers for almost an hour. Something in his demeanor was allowing him to pass through these protesters without eliciting aggression or impedance, even from the more hostile of those filling up the Capitol building. By contrast, during this same period, Capitol Police Officer Harry Dunn was having an opposite experience with these protesters. This was despite the fact Dunn was carrying an M4 automatic rifle. At 2:39 p.m., he was captured on a D.C. Metropolitan Police officer's body cam, screaming at and threatening protesters in the crip. "You'll be finished in one fucking minute. You're fucking hurting us. Get the fuck out of here. Get the fuck out of here. You're hurting us. You're hurting us." Dunn was quickly approached by a Capitol Police captain who put his hand on Dunn's shoulder, imploring him to calm down. In an interview that I recently conducted with another unnamed Capitol Police officer who has reached out to me with his own January 6th story, he shared that Officer Dunn was assigned as his field training officer when he graduated from the Capitol Police Academy. Part of the training he received from Dunn was in de-escalation tactics when dealing with unruly protesters. In that phone interview, I played for the unnamed officer the audio quoted above. The officer responded, "Wow, that's the exact opposite behavior for which he trained me." After Lieutenant Johnson's suggested behavior for Motor 13 and his group to successfully extract themselves from their tenuous position in the mob, Motor 13 responded, "I don't believe that's the situation, considering a couple of us have already been pepper sprayed by personnel in the crowd. I don't believe that's the situation right now." Beginning to consider how he would take action to rescue these officers who were trapped, in Motor 13's words, Lieutenant Johnson radioed, "Does anyone have a bullhorn that I could use? I need a bullhorn, any arrest kits anywhere close, and I'll go get it." The operator responds to Lieutenant Johnson, "Simulcasting for 405J, that's Lieutenant Johnson's call sign. I've got 20 ATF and FBI tactical units at the speaker's lobby. Where do you want them?" Lieutenant Johnson replied, "South Barricade. I'll meet them at the South Barricade," the operator says. "They're already at the center. Speaker's lobby, sir." Johnson responds, "Are they in the building already, you said?" The operator says, "They affirm, at Speaker's lobby." Johnson replied, "Have them meet me at the Senate door. Tell them to come out of the building. They're going to go get the officers on the rotunda steps." Minutes go by with no response from the ATF and FBI tactical units. Lieutenant Johnson again radios a request for a bullhorn. "I need a unit to get me a bullhorn. I need the FBI unit or whatever responding units to meet me at the Senate door. Right now the demonstrators aren't protesters. They're not hitting anybody. They're not doing anything to harm anybody. I need a bullhorn. I will use those officers and I will walk through the crowd and I will get them myself and we will do so safely. I just need a bullhorn. Can I get any unit to get me a bullhorn? Bring it outside the Senate door. That's all I need, a bullhorn and those officers." At some point during these radio exchanges, Lieutenant Johnson managed to acquire and don a red Make America Great Again ball cap. As Joe Hanneman of the Epoch Times reported, Johnson said wearing the MAGA cap made the crowds more receptive to him, providing a level of safety that he likened to a tactical helmet and served as a de-escalation tool. Frustrated that he's getting no response from the tactical teams, his additional calls for other units, and the bullhorn, Lieutenant Johnson again takes matters into his own hands. Again, because over an hour earlier, Johnson had similar frustration when seeking permission from Assistant Chief Yogananda Pittman to evacuate both the Senate and House chambers, receiving no responses. As he told the Epoch Times, "I begged for help all day on January 6, 2021, and I feel I was largely ignored. There was no response from anybody at the command center," Johnson said. "I say even before I initiated evacuation, I say specifically, we've got to start thinking about getting the people out before we don't have a chance to." I heard no response. Then I asked for permission to evacuate. I heard no response. Lieutenant Johnson radios again, "Stand by, stand down, stand down. I'm going to get them. Stand down." Motor 13 responds, "Just be advised, you may also want to know that there's a window up here on the center rotunda steps on the north side of the door, a window that has been breached, and if we leave this area, they're going to have free rein to walk into the Capitol from this window." Johnson replies, "I don't care if they get into the Capitol. They've got 1,500 people in the Capitol already. The only thing I'm concerned about is getting the officers off of the stairs. I just need a bullhorn and don't..." "Thank you. I got a bullhorn." At this point, Lieutenant Johnson goes radio silent and encounters two Oath Keepers, one of whom was retired New York Police Sergeant Michael Nichols. This unfolding scene was famously captured by videographer Rico Lastarza. From Starza's video, we can hear the exchange in which the two Oath Keepers identify themselves to Johnson. They ask him how they can help. "If you guys can help me save some of the guys, if you can help me get aside these people, I'd appreciate it. I just need to get these other officers out. They're scared. We're getting beat up, but the people who didn't go for help are laughing at us," Johnson said. Oath Keeper Michael Nichols shows his badge to Johnson and says, "I can do that. I can help." Johnson then handed Nichols the bullhorn he had acquired, and Nichols said, "All right, let's go," and begins heading toward the east stairs of the Capitol building. Reaching the bottom of the stairs, Johnson says to Nichols, "Just let me hold on to you. We're here. We've got you." As he takes the lead with Johnson following, holding the hand of Nichols, and the second Oath Keeper taking the rear position with his hand on Johnson's back. At 3:11 p.m., the trio ascends the steps approaching the east side Columbus doors as one of them announces, "We're Oath Keepers. Stand aside. Make a hole. We're Oath Keepers." The protesters part and allow them to pass. Now, 31 minutes earlier, at 2:40 p.m., the now infamous Stack 1 of Oath Keepers had already entered through those historic Columbus doors. Among this particular group of Oath Keepers were those now convicted of a wide range of felony charges in the first of three Oath Keepers trials. Included in this stack was Ken Harrelson, who was the first of the Oath Keepers to encounter Capitol Police Officer Harry Dunn, who had just raced to the top of the rotunda stairs carrying his M4 rifle. Highly distressed, Dunn shouted at Harrelson, "Officers down!" Harrelson responds, "Really?" Harrelson and the other Oath Keepers had not seen or even heard of any violence against law enforcement up to this point. Harrelson had been engaged in a security detail, escorting a group of VIPs from the Ellipse, some of whom were scheduled to speak at a stage on the Capitol grounds, an event that had been legally permitted by the Capitol Police weeks before January 6, even before the December 19, 2020 announcement of President Trump's speech at the Ellipse. Harrelson's protectees were led from the Ellipse to the Capitol's East Lawn without incident, navigating thousands of rally attendees who were moving toward the Capitol for the many scheduled speeches and marches to take place that afternoon. They arrived several minutes before protesters began breaching those east side barricades and running toward the Capitol's steps. Harrelson nor any other Oath Keeper participated in that breach, only moving in the direction of the Capitol after police had been ordered to withdraw and those barricades had been removed. Even after taking a position on the Capitol steps, waiting for other Oath Keepers to arrive, and while singing the national anthem along with the crowd, Harrelson had not witnessed any violence. When he finally moved with the surging throng through the Columbus doors, there was no longer any resistance from the small group of Capitol Police officers at the doorway. Dunn continued. Yes, something inaudible. Out on stretchers. They're fucking us up. Something else inaudible. Harrelson and three other oath keepers immediately took up position between Officer Dunn and the more agitated and unruly protesters. They stand side by side with their backs turned to Dunn, facing the protesters. Publicly available videos capture this crucial event. At one point, Harrelson can be seen using both of his extended arms to hold back protesters from Dunn's position at the top of the staircase. Several eyewitness accounts attest to the fact that this small group of oath keepers de-escalated an extremely volatile situation, as some of those protesters being kept from Dunn were taunting him, calling him a variety of names. One protester shouted at Dunn, "You're a bully! You're a bully with a badge!" Others can be heard chanting, "Oathbreaker! Oathbreaker!" Keeping those more hostile elements of the crowd away from Dunn probably saved lives, as the highly distressed officer was near a breaking point. Within only a few minutes, hard unit officers arrived at the top of the staircase and led Dunn away. There was one word not heard or captured on video being chanted by any of those protesters. Specifically, the N-word. In Officer Dunn's many press interviews, in his FBI interviews, and in his testimony before the January 6th House Select Committee, Dunn often repeated the claim that he had been called the N-word by many protesters. There were multiple variations of the same story being repeated, but in a podcast interview by the New York Times reporter Michael Barbaro, Dunn explained, "I can't fight nobody else. I can't. I'm tired. And it's like 30 or 40, 50 people. I can't fight y'all. Let's talk, man." So they started talking about how Joe Biden didn't win the election. And I said, "I voted for Joe Biden. Does my vote not count?" And then that's when this girl said, "You hear that? This N-word voted for Joe Biden, guys." And then the whole 20, 30, 40, 50 people that were there said, "This N-word voted for Joe Biden. Boo." Except in what was probably the most recorded event in human history, with at least one out of three protesters holding their cell phone cameras aloft, there has been no video or audio evidence presented that this racist N-word chant ever took place on January 6th. In one of my own face-to-face meetings with Lieutenant Tarek Johnson, he was accompanied by another, now retired, Capitol Police officer. Now, Dunn, Johnson, and this unnamed officer are all black men. I asked the two that I was seated with about this story that Officer Dunn had repeated so many times. The unnamed officer stopped me, and he said, "Are you asking me if anyone called Dunn a nigger that day?" I responded, "Yes." "Never happened," he resolutely responded. From another story by the New York Times, it related how many Capitol Police officers were not thrilled with Dunn constantly sharing that N-word story in his many press interviews. Quoting from the Times, "To some, when Dunn talked about the racism he endured on January 6th, he made it sound as if it was all about race. During my interview with the unnamed Capitol Police officer first mentioned in this story, he went into further detail about his relationship with Dunn during the 12 weeks in which Dunn was his field training officer. Dunn seemed like a good guy, very professional and down to earth, but he always had a way of bringing racism or black culture into conversations." The officer went on to tell me, "We lost our relationship after January 6th. He even deleted me from social media. That is the general feeling throughout the force." Another telling revelation in my interview with this unnamed Capitol Police officer was the fact he also had a rather low opinion of Lieutenant Johnson, despite that they don't personally know one another. This comes from the fact that two officers in his own unit were part of the 16 rescued by Johnson and the two oath keepers. They had relayed to this officer that Johnson had unnecessarily endangered them by escorting them through the crowd of protesters. According to this officer, his unit members did not feel trapped or unsafe in their location near the rotunda doors. What these two rescued officers had never heard, though, was the radio transmission from Motor 13 to Lieutenant Johnson. And again, I quote, we have about a half a dozen officers that are trapped between hundreds of people at the rotunda doors that cannot get out. The crowd is very hostile, and we need additional officers here, hardened platoons with munitions, to be able to clear these steps. It's an officer safety issue. I read to this officer the transcript from that radio transmission, and he responded, "Wow, that language changes everything I previously thought." Well, facts have a way of doing that. Only a few minutes after Lieutenant Johnson and the two Oath Keepers entered the East Columbus doors, Michael Nichols can be seen and heard in the video using the bullhorn to command the crowd, "Make a hole! Make a hole!" The protesters who were packed outside the doorway began to relay the message, "Make a hole! Make a hole! The cops are leaving! Make a hole!" Nichols exited first, immediately followed by Johnson and then 16 Capitol Police officers, 15 of whom were wearing riot gear. It was an odd sight, seeing hard gear units leaving the interior of the Capitol rather than staying inside to defend the building. But a distress call had been sent. Officers, trapped. The crowd is very hostile. It's an officer safety issue. Once again, Lieutenant Johnson had responded accordingly to the call as it was issued and void of assistance from ATF and FBI tactical units or other Capitol Police units. He initiated the rescue of these 16 officers from what he knew to be a dangerous situation as described to him over the Capitol Police radio channel. Stunningly, in return for Johnson's initiative and bravery in the chaos of the moment and in response to panic calls on their radio comms, he was suspended from the Capitol Police the very next day for, and I quote, "conduct unbecoming." Now, was it the red MAGA hat he donned to more easily pass through the pro-Trump crowd? Was it the fact that he recruited two Oath Keepers for assistance in the rescue? Johnson believes, and I quote, "they had no choice but to suspend me." The more complete story of this 17-month suspension and his subsequent demotion from lieutenant to private is found in the aforementioned story from the Epoch Times. I worked with Joe Hanneman for several weeks on this story, but his editors stuck to their strict policy of not granting a contributing byline to non-employees of the Epoch Times. In that article, Lieutenant Johnson explains that the suspension was part of a concerted effort by Capitol Police leadership to silence him for having embarrassed then Assistant Chief Yogananda Pittman for her lack of leadership throughout the entire day of January 6. You can also review part 1 and part 2 of this series as well as my TweetStorm rollout about Pittman for more detailed information about her lack of action on January 6th. On a side note, I will provide links for all of these articles and that tweet storm wherever this podcast is published. There's a stark difference between the official Capitol Police and mainstream media narratives regarding Lieutenant Tarik Johnson and Officer Harry Dunn. Irrefutable evidence of Johnson's heroism and calm under fire is replete throughout the record of the day. His early attempts at organizing decontamination and triage areas for his chemically attacked and otherwise injured officers, his rescue of the late Senate Sergeant-at-Arms Michael Stinger, his having initiated the evacuation of both the Senate and House chambers, and the widely publicized rescue of the trapped officers from the Rotunda area. All of this was done despite having received no response or assistance from Assistant Chief Pittman or others in the Capitol Police Command Center. And after making repeated pleas for assistance, direction, or permission for his actions taken, Officer Dunn, by contrast, publicly exhibited a breakdown in his training, contentiously berating protesters and displaying highly distressed, erratic behavior. Even when claiming he made effort to de-escalate tensions, Dunn instead recounted a racially charged event by up to 50 protesters for which there is no evidence and about which many of his fellow officers do not believe occurred. Dunn also altered his testimony between two different FBI interviews, the first of which corroborated video evidence of Oath Keepers protecting him from aggressive protesters, and the second, a total reversal, in which he then claimed his encounter with the Oath Keepers was instead contentious. Now, this writer has seen the unreleased video and read both FBI 302 documents. All these are still under seal by the Department of Justice and Capitol Police leadership, which, once released, in my opinion, will show that Dunn perjured himself while under oath before the House Select Committee and in that first Oath Keepers trial. It is also my opinion that Dunn was brought in for his second FBI interview in August of 2021, specifically to change the Oath Keepers story he'd presented during his first FBI interview in May of 2021. Let me read you a quote real quick from that particular interview. United States Capitol Police Officer Harry Dunn informed all protesters they needed to leave and told the Oath Keepers that the protesters were fighting officers. The Oath Keepers advised Dunn they would help keep the protesters from the Lower West Terrace area. Dunn advised he allowed them to stand in front of him to help keep the protesters from getting down the stairs. Dunn left this area when he was relieved by USCP riot officers. This was from his FBI interview on May 18th, 2021, as publicly disclosed by the United States House Select Committee to investigate the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol. I also believe, as I said before, this change in his story had to be done in preparation for the government's prosecution of the Oath Keepers. Dunn's original version was incredibly damaging to the narrative the government was then building as they sought to present the Oath Keepers as the ultimate scapegoats for what took place on January 6th. Despite Lieutenant Johnson's heroic behavior on January 6th, he was suspended from the force for 17 months, demoted in rank, then subjected to a lengthy, career and reputation-crushing investigation to cover up Capitol Police command failures and malfeasance. During his suspension, he was not allowed to leave his home during the hours of 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., Monday through Friday, for the entire duration. Johnson was also denied mental health counseling services provided by the Capitol Police. He believes they were trying to force him to commit suicide. He did receive counseling, but he was forced to pay for those therapy sessions himself. By contrast, Officer Dunn was elevated to the status of a national hero, receiving special permission from the Capitol Police to give interviews to multiple mainstream media outlets. He even received a book deal from Hatchet Books. The title of the book is Standing My Ground, A Capitol Police Officer's Fight for Accountability and Good Trouble, and it is now available wherever books are sold. Dunn has received a Congressional Gold Medal, and on the second anniversary of January 6, President Biden awarded him the Presidential Citizens Medal. While Dunn has become an outspoken advocate for increased United States Capitol Police mental health care services, one might readily assume that his ongoing counseling and therapies have been and are being covered by the department. One final editorial note. In the first Oath Keepers trial, Judge Amit Mehta aggressively acted to block the defense teams from presenting evidence of Dunn's conflicting FBI 302s and the video evidence of Johnson's rescue event utilizing the assistance of those two Oath Keepers. Judge Mehta allowed the government prosecutors, though, to present multiple prejudicial videos of evidence, barricade breaches, and Capitol building breaches for which the Oath Keepers took no part and weren't even present, or even on the Capitol property at the time. Mehta then purposefully blocked video presentations and testimony of actions on January 6, which portrayed Oath Keepers in the more favorable reputation they had developed and earned in their 13-year history. As an organization dedicated to supporting law enforcement, there were numerous examples of such behavior on their part that day. In that trial, the jury was denied the opportunity to see and hear exculpatory evidence and testimony about those two most important events. All right, that concludes my reading of Part 3. The Capitol Police were sacrificial pawns on January 6th. I will have all the links available, whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on. So be sure and check out those links if you haven't read the previous stories. They are a great precursor to this one. Thanks so much for joining me today. Once again, this is Steve Baker, the Pragmatic Constitutionalist, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.